Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Farmer Sense Podcast. I am your host, Rick Willert, and my co-host with me today is Andrew Foof. How are you today, Andrew?
Good. There it is. I knew we were going to have the common thing. I just didn't know if I was going to jump it or not.
So. Yeah. No. And we got a great guest with us. Exciting. This is awesome. So we have Travis Potter with us today with Green Lightning Ag. How are you today, Travis?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're awesome.
Great.
Thanks for being on here. This Green Lightning Ag, if nobody has heard of it, I'm just going to give a quick rundown. So it's turning well water into a usable nitrogen for your crops, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So can you give us some kind of background on the company, who's a part of it, how it got started, maybe your whatever you want to say about yourself?
Yeah. I'll give you kind of the fundamental background. Okay. So I met Joe about 4 years ago. So Nitro Joe, you'll see him on the website. And at the time, we had an organic beverage company, and we were launching a bunch of new products, and we didn't have enough ingredients. And now, background, farmer from, you know, for generations, trying to figure out a way to make money. And then got in the organic side in 2000 as kind of a niche, but also just to clean up chemicals, try to figure out smarter ways to feed people.
Yeah.
And then later on into organic dairy, and then any kind of added value product that was organic, I tried to do and process, and everything from meats to dairy, and later on soft serve ice cream. And we played all kinds of different things. Finally got to the beverage side, sold a lot of them to restaurants all over the world. And we were about to get stuck with not enough citrus and other things. So during that time, we're trying to figure out how do we get more, instead of adding more acres, it takes 3 to 7 years to get there. How about if we could just increase the yields? So that was the first part of it. So we thought, let's try all kinds of different botanicals and minerals and nutrients and all kinds of things. And so at the time, our PhD agronomist was working on all those. And I was working on a couple drinks. And some of those drinks were nitro coffee, nitro sodas, nitro cream sodas. I was having fun taking nitrogen from the atmosphere and making creamy, crazy drinks.
Okay.
And, cool. And I'm thinking to myself, how is it that our number one problem with organic agriculture is not enough nitrogen and we breathe it? Like, there's got to be a way to take what, like, if I can shove in a drink, why can't I shove it in my irrigation lines and make more crops? Okay. And, so I asked our agronomist at the time, I said, can I just do that? And she said, no, that's more like you're swishing it around. Like, it's like wind. Like, you're not really doing anything. It's a different kind of nitrogen. And I'm like, okay, I don't really get it, but I get it. It's not chicken manure, but it's different, right? So at that point, I'm like, well, how do we take it and put it in? She's like, well, I just met a guy, and he does what you're talking about. And I'm like, okay, I've heard all kinds of things like that. He's like, his name's Joe. He lives in Florida. He's a Florida native, not a farmer, but he came out with this concept. And I'm like, okay, I need to know him. Like, let's get on a call. And like the next day, it was like Friday, and like Saturday morning, I'm on a call with him and a couple of his buddies that were to kind of figuring out if this thing works or not. And I got on there and I said, okay, so you're taking atmospheric nitrogen and you're mixing with water somehow, and I could put on my crops and it's going to grow like crazy. And he said, yeah. I said, is it toxic? And he's like, no. I said, does it smell like when you're walking down Home Depot or the farm store or something? And he's like, nope. It smells like water, looks like water, tastes like water. I'm like, tastes like water? You can drink it? And he's like, yeah. Yeah, it's nitric oxide. It's basically what it turns into in your body. It's the same thing as when you have super beets. And I'm like, whoa. Okay, so a non-toxic option that comes from the air and water, we could, you know, that should be perfect for the organic world. And that changed the whole industry. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking, I'm like, man, we could feed Africa and India. I could feed the whole world if that was the case. And so I said, okay, so I need some of this product. And it was like August or late July, and you can't grow a whole lot or plant something new, especially in North Idaho where we were at near Coeur d'Alene. Like our season's like 12 days or something. Like it's nothing. Okay. And so we have if you don't have rain, you might get negative. I don't know. But but at that time I had built some geothermal greenhouses. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna grow citrus in Idaho. I don't care what anybody says. Like I'm gonna have weird stuff because I want to see if I can grow it. I'm not gonna have green disease if the bugs are dead and they can grow them in a greenhouse. So anyways, I thought it'd be kind of fun to figure it out. So he sent it to me, a gallon jug of it. And I get it. And I'm like, looks like water, smells like water. Like, what's up with this stuff? And I was geeking out on water at the time. I was, you know, nitrogen sodas and carbonated sodas. And we had algae tubes and systems and fodder for our cattle. Like I do all the weird stuff that nobody else would ever spend any money on. But I thought it'd be fun to try. Oh. And, yeah. So he's like, yeah, try it. He's like, your best way to do it is try tomatoes. And I'm like, okay. So I go, I'm trying to find tomatoes in like late July, first August. So I'm like, where are you going to find some tomato plants that time of year? I went to this hardware store and they had all these like free ones, like take them. They're about to die. And I'm like, perfect. I took like 200 of them. And I'm like, if I can get these suckers to live with his stuff, then I have something. So I took them and I put them in our greenhouse and the half of it that, the whole thing was all the same dirt, but the half of it, I didn't put anything in except for just water. And we had like soil, you know, like we have mycorrhizal fungi and probably bat guano and all kinds of weird stuff, like hippie stuff in there. And I thought, okay, the soil's pretty good, but I just killed some tomatoes recently in there. I know it's not perfect. So like, why not? Let's try it. So I planted it. The 50% I put with his stuff on it 2 weeks later was like a foot and a half, 2 foot taller. And it went from these peaked, ugly looking tomatoes to and growing up. And I'm like, okay, his work. And then I looked to the side and all the ones I didn't put it on were dead in a doornail, like fungus, aphids, like they were pathetic. And I'm like, okay, they're next to each other in the same greenhouse. And those are eaten by bugs and fungus. And these tomatoes look beautiful. Like, what's up with that? So I thought, okay, let's just keep on going. Maybe it was my soil. I don't know. So I sprayed it again. And then about 2 months later, we're in October now. And I've got 6 and 8 foot tall tomatoes with 9 and a half bricks tomatoes hanging off these things. And I'm like, I've never been able to get that kind of tomato on my property ever. And I thought we're onto something here. And so at that point I'm like, okay, let's go through the winter. That we had like a negative 20 come in and kill everything. And so we had all this foliage just, and I waited till like, early March when the greenhouse started warming up a little bit. And I'm like, okay, let's go get same kind of tomatoes, do the same thing, but I'll do the opposite side. And sure enough, the opposite side, where I put it on grew like crazy. The other ones were growing okay. You know, they weren't awesome, but they were growing okay just because it was the time of the year and the environment was good. Mm-hmm. But about a month later, they started getting aphids and then they started getting yellow and then they started falling over and then they died. And so I'm like 45 days. I'm like, oh, killed another batch of tomatoes. It's a common disease in North Idaho, by the way, killing tomatoes. Or having just green tomatoes because you can never get them to ripen. So at that point, I'm like, okay, these are working. Obviously, it worked. I froze his stuff. We cooked it. I did all kinds of stuff to it. I'm like, if this stuff's real, it could be a big deal. So I called him up, and I'm like, okay, so I'm trying it. I'm interested. And at the time, he was kind of looking for investment or partnership. He didn't know what he wanted to do. And I said, well, what is this machine you're doing? And he said, well, I said, well, how much volume can you do? And I'm thinking volume. I'm a farmer, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, I could do about a gallon a day. And I'm like, a minute? He said, no, a day. And I said, an hour? He said, no, a day. I said, so like, what's the size of this machine? He's like, oh, it's the size of a coffee pot. I'm like, oh, so you can just like make a huge one, right? And he's like, nope, doesn't work like that. And I'm like, oh. So I got so excited about this. I'm like, well, what are you going to do? He's like, I said, well, maybe it's only like $50, you know? Like, how much are you going to sell these things for? He's like, $10,000. I'm like, $10,000 for a gallon a day? Like, what industry would that be good for? He's like, well, we're good in the cannabis industry. They want to buy it. I'm like, well, yeah, but who wants to grow more weed? That's a bad idea. Like, let's grow food. So anyways, he agreed that we need to scale it up. We ended up partnering up after I tried on strawberries and I tried on pasture and lawn and all kinds of stuff. And I tried seeing if I can grow algae out of it and all kinds of weird stuff. And finally we partnered up on it and I said, let's see how big we can make these things. And so he did all kinds of experiments and realized there's a point of diminishing returns where it turns into hydrogen peroxide or turns into something else, the more power you put in it. And so basically it was a couple years of tweaking it and tinkering with it, figuring it out. And finally we now have a machine that the same size machine he had before, does a gallon an hour, which is a lot better. Mm-hmm. But the big one does 150 gallons a day. And then we're working on two massive ones right now, like an $850,000 one and a $1.5 million one that does 2.5 million gallons a year. And the other one does like 1.3 million gallons a year. So we finally figured it out. But as we were figuring out the model, I thought it was pretty interesting. Like, you know, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Joe real quick.
Okay.
So Joe's not a normal farmer. Like, and if you got in a conversation with him, he's going to be like way over there. Like, farmers are brilliant. We're all plumbers. We're all electricians. We're all mechanics.
Right.
And we all like to make things go faster and break stuff. Like, yep. This is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you getting too much background noise, by the way?
No, nope, no, good. Everything's fine. Okay. No, you sound good.
All right. Yep. I got grandbabies running in the background.
No, they're fine.
by the way, I've got 11 kids and 9 grandbabies so far. So we are a big family, and they're all eating over here today. So
awesome.
I hear something back up. Yep. But going back to Joe's deal, Joe was a Florida native. He was the marine industry. Later on, he got into hydrogen engines. Well, let me go back. Marine industry, went in the Navy, was under the sea submarine guy for like 5 to 8 years. I don't even remember what he said. Nobody's normal if they've been under the water for years. I'm just telling you that. Like,
yeah,
he's an efficiency expert at very least, right?
Yeah.
like they think differently than we do. And so then after that, he got out and he made hydrogen engines and syngas technologies and like how to get rid of exhaust emissions by adding some technologies to exhaust tips, all kinds of stuff like that. And in that, this product that we have now is basically a waste product of some of the other stuff he was doing. And he was trying to figure out what it was. So by accident, he figured out that we actually have something significantly better. He just didn't know how to go to market with it or how to sell it to farmers or, you know, or how to scale it up. So so in that, we finally got to a place where we got bigger machines. We've done a bunch of trials because that was also part of it. Like, it worked in my tomatoes. It worked on some citrus in Florida. It worked in Maryland on some crops there. USDA did some stuff. Like, we tried it on all kinds of different little things, but we hadn't done it at scale. And then we had a couple people that we decided we wanted to try it different ways. We did we used a lab in Washington State, and then they did a big part of that on potatoes. And so what we found there was pretty interesting. We ended up with about 5,500 pounds extra potatoes with electricity and water than we did with 28.
Awesome.
So that, and then, but also we didn't put anything on it and we got 14 ton. So we got 14 ton for, it tells you the soil was not very good. 21 is the national average on potatoes.
Okay.
We got 28 and a half tons with electricity and water. And our potatoes are bigger than conventional, which organic typically are half the size. So we were pretty stoked on that. And then Jason Webster did a test with precision planting in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And he kind of bought it to show that it didn't work, but got surprised. Found out it was very economical. And he ended up with 281 bushel with 88 gallons of our stuff, which was 14 bushel higher than UAN 28 or 32. So that was pretty significant. We also found that if we put 30 gallons on, we only got 230. But still, it was an organic crop, except for the 32. Obviously, that wasn't. But we wanted to see, you know, how it would stack up, and it stacked up really well. And so then we did some wheat trials in Canada, found just 10 gallons of our stuff increased the yields, you know, like $21, which that guy has like 400,000 acres. So when you just have a 2 cent, you know, or 20 cent cost of goods to make $21 is pretty good ROI.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got that many acres. So that was kind of a first one. We've been doing a lot more trials since then. Arizona, right now in Illinois and Kansas and all over. But moral of the story is what Joe figured out is definitely going to feed the world, and it's going to be the new way that farmers do fertilizer, nitrogen forever.
Absolutely.
The way we make the Haber-Bosch that we have now is brilliant. It was a green revolution. This is the next generation. This is like maybe beyond what Tesla is for the car industry compared to, you know, an old vehicle you had to jump start to make your way to school because the starter wouldn't work, you know, that kind of thing. So going back to it, where we're at today is we finally got to a place where we've been proving it out. We're selling them. We went from a tiny little facility in Florida where Joe's at, to Lexington, Kentucky, where we just moved the family to and got a new farm here. We needed to be centrally located to the Midwest and everybody that needed nitrogen. And That's about 90% of the nitrogen use in this country is within 1,000 miles from us right here.
Yeah.
So, so that's where we're at today. We've been kind of cranking on figuring out how to break it. What happens when it freezes? Like if you catch on a fire, what does it look like? What does it smell like? Can you kill an animal with it? Yeah, we had 7 sacrificial lambs. We're like, it's kind of like urea, but it's just water. Like what happens? And we found out it works better than urea for livestock for feeding. And we're like, oh, there's another option. We end up feeding 4 pounds to 1 pound of gain with our water with them, instead of 8 to 1, like we did with the other feed. So that's kind of stuff that we're still trying to figure it out. The main part is if we just take the 96 million acres of corn in this country and every farmer can make it for 1% of their cost, mm-hmm. we just increased profitability by like $20 billion in this country. Mm-hmm. And if we can go to Africa and we can have this, you know, with solar panels and a windmill in the middle of a place where they have no electricity, we can feed a lot more people. Mm-hmm. And then they don't need to import 68% of their food. So that's kind of stuff we're thinking about. Like, that's where we're at now is just like, how do we scale it? How do we get on the farm? And we're not perfect. We've gotten on farms and we had like some Amish guys that ran some like milk through it. The water was it has so much calcium in it. It got stuck and it caused problems. We did, we've had like a lake in Arizona, like where there used to be a lake where the water came in, it looks good, but the silt gets clogged in it. So we've been working on filtration systems and how to descale it and, you know, things like that. It's not just as easy as you just hook it up to the well or the pond and call it good, but it's getting there. Like we're pretty close to that.
So. Yeah. I see like what every year and a half or 2 years, you have to change a filter on like just the single option. So what I've seen on your website is you have just a like 275 gallon cage tote with a unit sitting on top of it. So that must be your bigger than your coffee pot, but yet the smaller version, correct?
that's like your 500 acre corn farmer.
Okay.
Yeah. So that unit does 500 acres of corn about mm-hmm. at 200 pounds equivalent nitrogen, or does maybe 700 or 800 pounds of wheat. I mean, 700 or 800 gallons of wheat, 700 or 800 acres of wheat.
Yep.
It's been a long time. Yeah. and so that's kind of where we're at. So if a guy has 2,000 acres, or let's say he's got 3,000 acres and he's doing 2,000 of corn, he needs 4 machines.
Yeah.
And it's kind of thing where you kind of set it like a hot water heater. You put it in there, and if you got cold water, you got problems. Not with us, it's not cold water. It's just if you look at it, it's not flowing right, or you know, if it doesn't turn purple on the stick, then you know you're something's not driving. But other than that, it should just be. You know, the goal is for you just park it. And it just makes product, and every day it cycles it out and goes into your big tank. And when you need it, it's sitting there waiting for you, and it's a year-round deal.
So it even drains itself, or it's like you said, it cycles it from that tote into another tank that you have, or whatever.
Yeah, most guys have been putting their own on it, but we're at a point now where we think we found the right one, so that we can make it real easy where guys don't have to recreate the wheel and go down to the farm store and try to figure out stuff. Nobody really has time for that anymore. Yeah. It's fun to figure out sometimes. Sometimes it just irritates you. So we're trying to have like all the things you could possibly screw up or break or, you know, extra filters like in a bag. Like, here you go. This is for you. You're a farmer. Yeah. If you have a problem, call us and we'll tell you how to fix that thing.
Gotcha. Is there any settings on the machine or is it kind of just preset, plug it in and it goes?
It's preset. You know, farmers are, my grandpa was a farmer from Iowa. And he used to have this thing. He said, life's like a carburetor. If you get it just right, you can do a wheelie for a mile. If you get it off just a little bit, you're broke down trying to figure out if you have a buddy that can come get you out of trouble.
Yep.
And so on our machine, there's a couple spots. If you can tweak it, and if you tweak it just right, it'll make product forever. If you screw with it just a little bit the wrong way, it'll make something different or make nothing. So that's one of those things where we've been like, I know you're a farmer and you like to tweak with stuff. Just until, don't touch it unless you have a problem. I have that same problem. It's like a disease we all have.
Yeah.
So you said something about a purple stick or something. So is there something in that container that lets you know it's working and doing its thing then?
So we have, we buy some indigo test strips for nitrate and nitrite. And, you just put it underneath it every once in a while.
Okay.
Just to make sure that you're purple and you'll see that it's working. If it's not, you call us and we'll tell you, you know, what might be an issue, you know, calcium clogging or, you know, there might be something, you know, it's not perfect, but so far you can't test it. We've sent it to labs all over, sent the same product to labs all over with different results. Okay. It's just not testable because there's no ammonia or salt in it. So you're not getting that same thing people are used to. So a lot of people are like, well, how do you know there's anything in it? Well, the only way that we've been able to figure out and get really good tests is through those strips. And if they're not working, then it's most likely it's not doing its job. It does more than just nitrogen. It does have a little hydrogen peroxide in it. It adds extra energy to the plant. That's kind of the hippie stuff. But the reality is it makes the plant happy and you end up with higher bricks and less bugs and fungus and all the stuff we're after.
Yeah, so it even helps with bugs and different diseases, huh? I mean, is that something that
what we learned before, the proactive versus reactive.
Okay.
When we were creating that other company, it was all about reactive. Like, what can we do to get rid of the fungus? Mm-hmm. What can we get rid of the bugs? And then Tom Dykstra has this video. I don't know if you guys ever saw his deal. But it's about bricks and insects, and it's awesome. And he talks about it. He's like, okay, I think it's 4 bricks is when the aphids come in, and then 5 bricks, you got another kind of bug. He's like, it's actually a good thing if you're at 11 bricks and the grasshoppers are eating everything. And I'm like, that doesn't sound like a good idea. And he's like, well, at that point, you're almost to where only animals or humans will eat it. And so if you can get it over 12 bricks and keep it there, you're going to have healthier plants and you're not going to have fungus or bugs or any of this stuff. So we liked it so much, we hired Tom. So he's helping us now. We needed a PhD bug guy, like just to prove that our stuff actually works at keeping bugs away. And so we're in the middle of trying to figure that out now, but we're also trying to understand, like a lot of guys are like, so when do you apply it? I'm like, I don't know. We've tried all kinds of stuff. We know that it's best foliar, but it works all different ways. And we just got to figure that part out. And so what he said was, and this is very unconventional, he's like, test your bricks. And if it starts getting less than 12, hurry up and put some more on. And I'm like, most farmers don't think like that. They're like, no, it's May. I need to have this on. You know, I'm putting a fungicide. I need to do this. You know, so we're kind of working between conventional wisdom and kind of the next generation of what we need to do to make healthier plants that that are more resilient to bugs and fungus. And if we can do that, we're going to get higher yields because they're not going to be eaten.
Yes, and you're right, Travis. So there's maybe 1-2% of farmers that are thinking like outside the box, like you said, or even outside the room. But it also comes down to ease of use, and maybe that's where some of your thinking's going. You know, as far as can they just put it in with their herbicide pass and spray it on foliar or whatever, or even. So I was thinking, you said it works best foliar. Has it been tried wide dropped or injected into the soil, like in a strip?
It works both ways.
Okay.
Because it's primarily nitrate, the nitrogen portion of it, it goes right in the plant. So it absorbs immediately. Mm-hmm. Where typically with like UAN, you've got, you know, ammonia and NO2, and it takes a while to convert into nitrate and go in the plant.
Yeah, you get those steps throughout the year. Yep.
Yeah, and you need a good soil biome to get that done. Mm-hmm. Ours, you don't necessarily need a good soil biome. It improves the soil biome.
Yeah.
So it's making it healthier. And so the plant's going for more P and K and uptaking minerals, the cation exchange better. You know, we're getting healthier plants. And that's where we start seeing those higher yields. The interesting thing, what we've seen so far is we get better results putting it on later than we do earlier. Like in the earlier stage, you know, that plant's already going to be green and growing, mm-hmm. but when you put regular stuff on, that salt just makes it blow up and it looks a lot greener. Ours doesn't look greener, even though we're green lightning. It takes a couple weeks to catch up, and then before too long, the other one's fading, and ours is surpassing it. And so if a guy puts it on, like when they put a fungicide on, or at the very end, you know, tassel, you're going to get more, you're not going to get that aborted corn. And you're going to get extra, you know, barley or wheat seeds so far as what we've seen. Mm-hmm. So it's still kind of a work in progress and understanding, but usually most nutrition falls off about halfway or three quarters of the way on. Yep. And then, and that's when everybody's on vacation and they kind of just get what they get. Mm-hmm. They should be thinking like, nope, I need to go put some more of the stuff on at like 8 o'clock at night, when the sugars are running, the plant wants to eat it. So, that's one thing Jason noticed. He's like, you know, it's crazy. This stuff's 2 weeks past the other stuff and it's still green, where the other stuff is drying up. And that's because we think that ours focuses on root growth first. And then later on gets, it kind of works for a living, like good sheep do. they actually go out to the pasture instead of being fed. Yeah. But, and so that's one of the things we saw that could be a potential win with this is, you know, your later crop putting on is going to be where you make your most money. And that's where all your profits at right there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Have you seen any results like through tissue testing, you know, that it's staying in the plant longer than maybe your traditional fertilizer or anything like that?
Yeah, so that's one of the things that's interesting. Ours, like we did a trial in Arizona recently, and this was on organic ground. They had a lot of fertility in, but still the plant was, it was wheat, and the plant was only 5 bricks with the grower standard with a subterranean drip, and it looked decent, but it was still like when you actually tested, there wasn't much in there. And then ours was 11 bricks, which is pretty dang good, but still grasshopper level. And then ours with one shot of foliar was at 13 bricks and it was significantly thicker and better. And so that's one of those things where over time we're going to see, you know, that kind of stuff makes a big difference. We did also found out was interesting. The 5 bricks had much higher nitrogen in it still than ours did. Ours had, and our 11 had less nitrogen in it and the other one had less than that in it. So the interesting thing there is it converted it into nutrients. And it's not just nitrogen sitting there anymore. Like it's activated. So that's one of the things a lot of people are like looking for nitrogen in the plant. But at some point, you don't want nitrogen left in the plant. You want it to turn into the crop it's supposed to be. And so that's kind of what we're learning is there's different ways. Now, that was an organic one. We've had conventional ones too. And what we found with the conventional ones, we think, based on our research, is that the salt blocks the growth in the future plant. And that's why it dies off early. Is it's kind of like the arteries are getting shoved full of mm-hmm. salt, and yep. it's not getting that sugar going up and down at night and day like it's supposed to, and which ours still does, and that's why we ended up having deeper roots. Like on those potatoes, we did petiole samples. We had like 43 pages of it. It's like mind boggling. But as we did it, we noticed that it was kind of like it was going like this, like I'm in Lexington, so I'm gonna say horse racing. Mm-hmm. And so in the beginning, they were whooping us. Because we didn't put it in the dirt, but they did. And then before too long, we caught up. And then it was kind of like we were head to head for a while. And all of a sudden, they dropped off a cliff. Boom. They were done. Ours hockey sticked. Our petiole samples were significantly healthier at the end, which meant the roots were growing deeper. And that's why we got the bigger potatoes. And we also, so some guys are like, well, I don't want potatoes to live forever. Like, I agree. But at some point you want good yields too. So we figured on that alone for an organic guy, he would have had a $2,500 net extra profit per acre on that, which is pretty insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. So that comes back to, you know, we really did this originally for the organic industry, but after looking at it, we're like, why not feed everybody? And if a conventional guy costs him, you know, it costs them $1,000 a year, maybe $1,500 a year to make 100 grand worth of nitrogen. Like that's the difference between their kids going to a big city somewhere and never coming back or staying on the farm cash wise.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we're like, this is legacy stuff. And on top of that, man, we can feed the world significantly better if we can go down that road. And it's interesting. You'd think that only 1 or 2% of the people that are reaching out to us are the crazy frequency hippies with different minerals and biologicals, and they're right about a lot of things. But it's actually over 80% of our customers are 2,500 to 5,000 acre farmers in the Midwest or Canada. Now, Canada is bigger; they're 15,000 to 25,000 on average. But it's the big farmers that are like, I am not going to make money on $4 corn this year. Mm-hmm. I need to do something. And if this works in the future, when we do $8 corn, I make a lot more money. But if I could bump my yield up or even get the same, but my cost of nitrogen is almost nothing, then I'm willing to try it. So we've had a lot of people that are like, you know, they need like 6 or 8 machines, but they're like, I'm going to try one
mm-hmm.
and get my feet wet. And then all their neighbors come over, and before too long, you know, everybody at the coffee shop's talking good, bad, and ugly about us. But it's all part of the fun of figuring all this out.
Yeah. So my favorite part, I think right off the bat, it wasn't even the money savings because I didn't know what it cost at the time, but it was the no salt part, because that's what I'm trying to keep out of my soils. That was huge for me when I heard that. But then putting a pencil to it, you're right. So one of those units, if I was to run it all year, so at our REC co-op, Rural Electric Co-op, charges about 14 cents a kilowatt hour. And didn't you say one of those is about, is it 8,000 maybe kilowatt hours a year to run just one unit?
So if you're running one unit, okay, at 14 cents a kilowatt, you're going to spend $1,400 a year.
Yep. That's where I was at with my figuring. Yep. And then if I was using easy numbers, 1,000-acre farmers usually spends about, well, I shouldn't say usually, this year spent $90 to $100 or $80 to $100 in nitrogen. And if I was to purchase two of those machines and run it, I'd literally have them paid for in 1 year on a 1,000-acre, or less, because I'd be putting on, about 200 units of nitrogen is what it would come up to, and it would be a wash, or I'd be making money the first year with two units.
So for 200 units of nitrogen, you would use 100 gallons of our product.
Yeah.
That's kind of the math. And we're not for sure on that. It's been a little bit more in some places and less on others, but that's about where we lean, because you can't actually measure it, because it's how it works. It works like nitrogen, mm-hmm, at that same level. So it's so your savings on, if you do a rolling over the past 5 years,
huge.
One machine would make about $100,000 worth of product on average.
Yeah.
Right. And your cost on that's $1,400. Now your cost on the machine is $38,500. So if you look at that, it's let's just say this year it'd be half. You're half your price for one machine, but then you own it, right? Mm-hmm. You got a $200 air compressor bill every 2 years, maybe, because it's going to break down, yep, and maybe a couple filters here or there. But the core fundamentals of it is if a guy can cut out that $80 or $90, maybe get rid of the fungicide because we think that we don't need it.
Yeah, good.
maybe get rid of a little bit of the pesticides. We might not eat it. If we can cut that out, we're at like $120, maybe a rolling five, like 180. And then we can, and then if we were to get a bump, if we got a 14 bushel bump at $4, it's still at another 50 or 60 bucks, but even if you just got a normal organic guy's going to see, some of those guys are going to get double because compared to what they're doing, because your NPK is out of whack. A conventional guy is going to get about the same, maybe, depending on where they're at and when they apply it and all that. We just don't know. But if you start crunching those numbers, at the end of the day, this is how you feed 25, 30 billion people instead of 8 on the same resources.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Absolutely. So the CECs in your soil, does that affect, do you think, how many units of nitrogen you get from this? I mean, can that play anywhere? Maybe make it so you're getting 2.5 versus 2, or do you know that at all?
Maybe. I think that, that potato stuff that we did, it was in sand, man. There was nothing in there.
Okay.
So to get the kind of yields we got was pretty good. Mm-hmm. If you're in Pontiac, Illinois, you have pretty good soil. Mm-hmm. So even an organic farmer is doing a lot better there than they are in maybe Western Nebraska. Right.
Yep.
So it's there's some benefits to all of it, but I think what it comes back to at the end of the day is nitrogen costs or nitrogen costs, doesn't matter if it's organic or conventional, you got to figure out a way to get it. And if you're, it's kind of like typically your yields are wherever you're at. Mm-hmm. If you got more water and you can pump it, you're good. Mm-hmm. If you're in a place where the Lord's blessed you with plenty of rain a year, you might get higher yields. We just don't know. We did find that if you pour stuff on it and like 15 minutes later, you get 2.5 inches of rain, doesn't work so good. It's not going to go in the plant.
Just going to ask about leaching or runoff or rain fast. I was just going to ask about that. So thank you.
So what we found is that our stuff doesn't run off the same way. Like typical UAN is going to run off because the ammonia and the nitrate is going to convert later after it's away from the plant, mm-hmm. and then it ends up washing away in the ditches or down, you know, into our water streams, right?
Yep.
And so ours, it goes right in the plant, or it finds the first root it could jump into and then goes that route. So ours does go quicker. It ended up coming back. It did go in the soil and come back on the plant another week or two later after that 2.5-inch deluge. But we didn't, you know, it's, in a perfect situation, you would let it rain, let it sit for the day, and then spray it on there. So we're still trying to, like, we know that if you do pivot irrigation, you need twice as much product. It just doesn't work as quick. We are doing some tests in the Great Lakes region, like Minnesota, for example, where they're testing, the state is, on our products to see how much nitrate runoff do we get, what's it look like. If it's more efficient, then they're going to be advocating for farmers to have what we have in the future. And I think that'll be all over the world, wherever there's water, where you have a lot of algae issues and you know, high nitrate levels. It's kind of interesting. Like, you complain about high nitrate in the water, mm-hmm. but we need it. But it's not the nitrate that necessarily caused it. It's you know, sister and cousin, the ammonia and the nitrite, that didn't make it in the plant quick enough. And that's why most nitrogens, like a lot of guys are like, well, what is, how much is in it? Well, it's more efficient. It's hard to explain it exactly. But basically, when you put stuff down, you're throwing away like 80% of it. Mm-hmm. Either goes back in the atmosphere, goes in the water table, or maybe it's sitting in the soil for later, but not usually. So that's kind of where we're trying to understand too, like, how does it work? A lot of guys have asked us, like, well, you need ammonia to blow up the cell walls and, you know, really get it real green real quick with that salt in there. And we've talked to some guys and they're like, yeah, that's it. That's kind of like when you spray a roach and it dies, it makes you happy. And you come back the next day and it actually walked away because you didn't clean it up. And you're like, oh, I didn't kill it. I just wanted that satisfaction to know that, you know, like the crop is greener than it was a couple minutes later. But the job was not done. And so part of what we're learning, that's what Tom Dutcher had told me. He said, really, that's kind of like that with farmers. Like, you want to see it green immediately. But if you see it fade later and you see ours keep on going, you know, if you got an extra week or two of green on ours, isn't that better than a little bit greener looking for a week or so? And so those are kind of things that we've been chewing on, trying to understand. The other thing is we do think that if you add our stuff to biologicals or minerals or to chemicals, it does activate it more. You don't need as much of it. Like, it makes it work better. There's something else in it from an energy perspective that makes that whatever you mix with it significantly more useful to the plant. And so that's kind of like, you know, if you were go back to the 1800s and you were going to say, someday we're going to be talking on a screen to people from different places all around the world.
Right.
And the people think you're out of your mind, right? But I think this is just kind of the next level of technology and farming. We don't even know. Like, some of the wackier type folks are like, there'll be a day when we can send a frequency out in the field and get rid of all the weeds for that. And that frequency will knock out the weeds. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the next generation of farming that we think. Maybe it's just kooky stuff. I don't know. But it should be pretty awesome if we can figure that out.
Yeah, I'm very interested. So I've been doing some treatments with seed and Bright Yeti is a company I've been working with, and I think that you guys just would play hand in hand so well together. And I do. I think it's great, and it makes me excited for agriculture. It does.
Yeah.
I mean, I like what you're doing. I like what Bright Yeti's doing. I like it, but I worry about you. You did say that the USDA did some testing, but there's some, you know, what are these fertilizer companies thinking? Or maybe are they wanting to work with you and buy you someday, but don't let them because they're going to shut you down. You know that, but that worries me. And it doesn't worry you. I'm not trying to put a bullseye on your back, but
no, we have a big guy that wants us to have this out there. You know, we're going to be protected. So that's all good. So good. I'm not too worried about that part. Yeah.
Good.
So it's, and we're in 30 states and like 12 countries this year. Like,
okay, good.
We're spreading it out. We're all patented up. We've been doing all the legal stuff and now we've got a plant that, it's a massive facility and we're ready to rock and roll. So we're in a good spot. Kind of going back to what you're talking about with the seed thing which is interesting. We did, when we were talking to some frequency guys about how frequency makes seed germinate better, mm-hmm. We thought, I wonder if ours does that. And so Richard, one of our partners, he's an organic farmer and conventional farmer in Washington State. And he's like, you know, I'm going to try 72 corn seeds. It was sweet corn. And then and soak it for 30 minutes with your stuff, with green lighting, and then 30 minutes with just water and see what happens. 100% of ours germinated. 9 of the other ones did not. Same dirt right next to each other. And we've been doing that with the fodder system and some of the other things. We're like, we're getting higher germination. We think it's turning the genes on at another level for those plants. And if you can get, not, you know, 10% higher germination, what's your yields look like? Mm-hmm. Like it's that, or what's your seed cost reduction look like? Mm-hmm. You know, that's where you start getting into like, oh, there's other cost benefits other than just that. You know, what, so those are kind of the fun parts. We're also like, with greens, if you spray it on at the end on greens, they last longer on the way to whatever market they're going to. And so we're trying to figure out, like, there's so many different things that we know that it works on. We're just trying to figure out the how, what, and why. But the main thing is, like, right now it's just, like, make as many as we can because we got farmers that, like, we just had to push it back this past month. Like, we've been at, like, 6 or 8 weeks, and we still got people mad at us because we're not quite getting them fast enough. But we're cranking them out, and we're getting the lines done, and, you know, we're really jamming at the plant. But in June, like basically from June 6th to July 7th, we're not going to have any, like we're trying to catch up on our supply chain. And we were caught a little off guard. We knew that people get excited about it. But as soon as they started going out there, people were putting on their crops and then their buddies are seeing it and thinking it's, you know, that it's not going to make any sense. All of a sudden it's blowing up. Like I looked at my phone earlier, like my phone broke, as you guys knew. And I'm like, I got 160 texts. People are like, hey, you know, everything from I need a machine. How quickly can you get them to me? Like WTF, like all those things. So I was like, if I'm like 6 hours without communication, like people lose their minds. And so we've been building a team around that, dealers and all that. But the good thing is we're going to be at a place by October where they're sitting on the shelf waiting for farmers.
Good.
They're going to get their paycheck from whatever the crop is. Yep. And hopefully it's better than break even this year. Mm-hmm. And then they can buy machines after we have a boatload more data.
Good.
Yeah, so what did you say the lead time was if I wanted one today?
If it was 4 days ago, it would have been July 6th. So today's April 19th. It would have been July 6th. We just kicked it back till now. It's going to be, June 6th. Now it'll be July 6th.
So I could still get it for my second pass, like with my first side.
Yeah, and Lord willing, all of a sudden we make a boatload more, and then the guys that said they couldn't make it as much of that one part that we needed, they kick it into gear, and you know, we're able to get more. But but in the meantime, right now we have several hundred of them going out this month. A lot of them going to Canada. A ton of them. I would say the majority of our customer is really the Midwest corn farmer and wheat farmer. Mm-hmm. Some guys are putting on soy, trying to see if they can increase their protein and get rid of that rust and some other stuff that if they can get rid of some of the chemical costs and it's 2 cents a gallon, like why not? So,
right. Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to know about? Like, I know on your website, it says, you know, you want darker colored tanks, stuff like that. Yeah. What about freezing? That's my, you know.
Yeah, so we've had a lot of freezing questions because most of us are all in freezing country. Mm-hmm. I'm not so much now, but I was. And so with the tanks, either tank heaters, which are kind of expensive, agitated water. So basically the water is just agitating with like 3 gallons per minute or the spray or just running air in it. And then that air just keeps bubbling and percolating and it doesn't freeze so much. So that's what the guys in, like, we just kind of pay attention to the Canadian guys because they all know better than we do.
Yep.
And then we asked a couple other tank manufacturers, and they said those are all kind of adequate ways of tank storage for your product. And some guys are just like, I don't even want to deal with tanks at all. I just want to buy twice as many machines and just turn them on in the season instead of do it year-round. But the year-round is the most cost-effective so far for most guys.
Yeah, my thought was to whatever you needed to just double up so you could do it in 6 months instead of 12. That was my personal thought, but I'm not saying everybody would do that, but that is an idea. So
kind of the fundamental cost is tanks are around 80 cents to a buck a gallon. Our machines make 55,000 gallons a year. And then you kind of work backwards on if it's a $38,000 machine, you're making 55,000 gallons a year. Is it cheaper to have two machines? Mm. You know? Mm-hmm. So, but it's kind of like a balance. It's pretty close. So like guys in the South don't care. Like, they're just like, whatever. I'm just going to run these things. And like, we have guys in Alabama that they put nitrogen down 10 times a year. They use a lot of nitrogen. Mm-hmm. And then you get some places and they're like, I've got like a 10 minute window to put stuff down. And then because we need stuff growing, like in Canada where they've got 20 hour days. They're like, when stuff grows here, it grows like crazy, but it also dies quickly. So we got to hurry up and get it out. So things we're learning.
Well, so a lot of the questions are kind of answered because it's still water. So there's no toxicity to the plant. We know that the pH doesn't get affected at all. Doesn't change. No. Can you?
It does change for about 3 seconds. It goes to about 2 pH for about 3 seconds. And then as soon as it hits the tank, it's fine. But if you were to take that same product and go across the hallway and test it, it's already back to whatever your pH was in your water. So just to clarify that part.
So my water pH is 8. I like to lower it down to the 5 and 6 when I spray with it. If I want to use this water for foliar, can I lower the pH with an acidic product?
Yeah.
And it's not fine. Okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, we haven't seen a problem with that. The only thing that we did see is we had guys that were like cleaning their machines with different types of acids, and a little bit was stuck in there, and it was down in the 2s and 3s, and it just wasn't working.
Yeah,
it was good. So we think 4.9 or higher, up into that 9.5 is fine.
Yep.
But they say that you get that pH around 5.5, 6, and it goes in the plant quicker. I'm not quite sure. I know ORP has an effect. So we kind of look at that too and try to figure out how to get as negative ORP as possible. And our machine does a little bit of that, but that's something that will be part of the future and how we also try to make it more like rainwater than groundwater,
Recycled rainwater. Let's say I'm pulling it off of my eaves troughs or whatever. Is it
so far better? It works better than really hard water.
That's what I thought.
We had some guys that were like they were able to use it at their cisterns or out of the ponds and with a better filter on it, better than they were out of their heavily calcium based groundwater.
Yep. Awesome.
And the only reason why that is because we have this little tiny orifice inside. It's a Venturi pump. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like the size of a needle, and the chance of getting that, like, it heats up to about 90 or 95 degrees, mm-hmm. and that calcium just loves to stick in there. So that's one of the things we've had to, we do add frequency to the machine that helps descale it some. We also had a descaler in front of it and the filter. So we put a lot of things in place in it that do help, but that's something that if a guy's got 250 bar, water, like, he's gonna have to do something about that. Like, it might as well use rainwater. It's just easier.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And shelf life, no issues with that either, or don't know so yet because it hasn't been long enough.
Yeah. I mean, Joe's tried it for like 11 years, something like that, and still seems it shelf life fine. I've tried it for 3+, mm-hmm. and it still seems the same. I did have going back to like what not to do, we found leaving the top off it. And leaving it in the sun, we made algae really good. And when you make algae, it off-gases and eats up all the nitrogen that's in it eventually. So you got to have a covered tank. Yeah. And you want to – so you put a lid on it and keep it covered is most ideal.
Yep.
So it's and opaque or clear tanks are not good. Like, paint them or put them inside on the other.
Yeah, we find that out with just filling up tanks on our farms to use for spraying. Yeah, if they're not, opaque or whatever, painted, they're full algae, that's for sure. But gosh, I don't know, you did a great job.
I think
you did a great job explaining everything right off the bat. I don't know if there's I'm sure there's other questions that'll come up, but you guys have a great website. It's greenlightning.ag. And we got that on the bottom of the screen here if you're watching on YouTube. And they got questions on there. They're American made, obviously we know that already. They got their mission, all sorts of things. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything else to talk about. I think we should let Travis enjoy the rest of his night with his 11 his 11 kids and all of his grandkids and everybody. I think we've we appreciate it. We're sorry you lost your phone, but we're glad you got reconnected with us. So
yeah, awesome. No, I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll definitely
sometimes it's a joyous thing to lose your phone until it also populates back on your phone. And you realize you need to call.
Yeah, no, I like leaving it at home once in a while. I don't like to lose it, but I like to leave it at home.
Yeah.
But yeah, I sent my email for more info. So I didn't plan on getting a unit this year, but I guess if you want to send one out, I'll take one. So,
so well, thank you very much, Travis. We appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys. Have a great one.
You too. Take care.
Yep. Have a good one.
Bye.
Hey, Rick, that was a great interview, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, I hear the thunder.
It was fantastic. Yes.
We can kind of hear it in the background there.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Travis was awesome.
He was.
Like I said, I think there's a Willard Farms Green Lightning dealership in the future. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Anybody could be a dealer for that, and I would sucker on it. I don't know. I'm glad.
What it can bring.
I'm glad I found out about it. I'm disappointed it wasn't sooner. Ooh, that was a good one. I think that's about 2 miles away.
Well, you're the only one hearing it, buddy.
No, I think everything was great. I think that was a fantastic interview.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know much about it other than what we saw in Houston, and I didn't go to any breakout sessions or anything with it. So and it was always kind of like a busy place. So I didn't know a lot about it going in other than what I've done on the website and then reaching out to them, you know, a month or so ago to find out about it, the machine itself.
Were they at the Commodity Classic?
They probably were. I don't remember seeing them there, but.
It was brought up at Total Acre, but I don't know if there was a session.
No, I don't think there was
a session. No, I just remember somebody talking about it and nobody really knowing much about it. And then we were looking for other people to have on, and you...
Yeah, because I wrote that in my phone from the Total Acre deal. I'm like, all right, no. So when I get back and I went through some of my notes, I'm like, all right, I got to Google this, and then I reached out just to see what it costs, and then, yeah, we were lucky to get Travis on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he had some issues with his phone. We were going to have him on earlier this morning, then we couldn't get in contact. I'll be honest, I was worried about all black Suburbans maybe picking him up, but it sounds like it's pretty safe. I don't think he's gonna be the engine running on water guy or anything, or what's his name? Last name's Diesel, first name. All you smart people out there know exactly what I'm talking. Rudolph Diesel. That's a conspiracy. Check that out sometime. Rudolph Diesel. I want to bring that up real quick. Since this is our little outro, since we already did the intro with Travis and I've had a couple drinks. So Rudolph Diesel, that whole story, if you think about it, he was potentially murdered.
Okay.
And it's a big conspiracy, but I mean, he invented diesel fuel and the diesel engine. And, Rockefeller was one of the suspects that thought that maybe he shouldn't be alive anymore because he was going to ruin all of his oil money. Yep. And needless to say, he did get murdered. And there was an interesting point to this story. When we talk about the Ford Motor Company or Henry Ford, think about this. Anytime you write Ford in a sentence, you capitalize it, don't you?
Yeah.
Unless you're... Yeah, I mean, it's Ford. It's like a company.
Right.
Why don't we capitalize diesel? It's a guy's last name that invented the product, invented the motor.
But you don't always capitalize gas.
Gas is not a guy.
I suppose.
Rudolph Diesel was a human being with a, you know, a upbringing and a family. Why don't, you know, if there was a Willard Fuel out there, I'd be pretty pissed off looking down on you guys thinking, why the fuck aren't they capitalizing Willard right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess Tesla. Does everybody capitalize Tesla?
Yes.
Okay.
I've never seen it not. That's a good point. And I didn't do any research on it, but now that you bring it up, yes.
I'm just going to start pulling stuff out of my ass here just to now, see.
I'm just going to start capitalizing diesel every time I write it somewhere, and people, they can auto-correct it all they want, but I'm just going to keep plopping that capital D back up there. The big D. It's getting all the D it wants for me.
I guess. Jeez. Well, I'll guess now I know what to look for if you're talking about diesel. Yeah.
Tuesday. Check Tuesday. Check Tuesday. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I got thinking about that. But I am worried about Travis and all of his family. And
yeah.
I hope
it's all good, like you think it. I mean, I'm yep. sure it is.
I think it will be, especially when he said USDA and all these.
Oh yeah,
we're doing
patents and everything else. Yep. So it's all patented and everything. Yeah. Yep. All right. So what'd you do this week?
Oh, I sprayed Monday, soybean pre on our no-till acres. Didn't plant anything. Did you plant anything?
Nope, didn't plant a thing.
Was there a lot of planting going on in your neighborhood? There wasn't ours. Yes,
there was a lot, and it was tough to sit and watch it.
Yep, I know. I agree. I had a issue with the planter, but I got it fixed now. It was an issue to where I was going to do a trial planting soybeans, and I didn't do it because the in-furrow wasn't working right. Mm-hmm. But I got that working now, so I am all ready to go. And there were beans planted in our area and a lot of corn.
And I would say that there was a lot more beans planted here than corn. I could be wrong. It just seemed like a lot of guys said that they were planting a few beans. There was a lot of corn that went in too, but mm-hmm. there were a lot of beans that got planted, I think.
Yep, there was.
I don't know. Yep. I planted 0.0 acres.
Yeah, me too. And you and I talked about this earlier. Actually, I think we recorded it, but decided not to put it on. But the anxiety, I always have that anxiety, that first start, that first day, just getting going. It's all excitement. You want to plant, you want to get that year started.
Yep.
But all you can think about and worry about is something going wrong and nothing working right. And that's what, that's the fear I always have.
Yep.
But even though I didn't plant, I did spray. Nothing went wrong, knock on wood. But I got through that fear or that anxiety. Now I'm like gung-ho. I'm like, let's plant tomorrow. Let's find a dry spot in the field. Let's check it out. You know, now I'm ready. But anyway, that's how I am. I don't know if other guys out there are that way. You are, obviously. You just said that. But my dad said he was that way.
First day, I'm ready to go to the field to test it to make sure it's working. Because everything that I've done so far, I figured that I need to do a better job of winterizing my gosh dang planter.
Because
I missed two plugs. And so I had two filters that sprayed water everywhere. Yeah, awesome. Good times. Fucking hated it.
Sorry about that, bro, Seth.
Yeah, I don't know. That was just
a frustrating deal. Special teams, special players, special plays.
There you go. You got that down really well.
Check
I've
Tuesday.
Got some stupid song in my head today from TikTok now, and that's all that shows up on my timeline, and it's stuck in my head. It sucks. But it is a catchy tune. I don't know.
Don't start it because I don't want to hear it. Anyway. I
got my starter mix kind of all mixed up. I showed you all the stuff that was in it and how black it was. And the only thing I was having was my fungicides I weigh. It has a tendency, not tendency, it does settle out in certain solutions. So overnight, you know, 24 hours, it's some of it is settling. But one little shake of the jar, and it's good to go. I mean, it's not that big a deal. So not really worried about it.
Good.
Yep. I don't know. You got anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think
I want to shout out to Glenn Young for being willing to come on and do a show impromptu, just because we kind of weren't sure how this was going to go today with not being able to get a hold of him.
Absolutely. I sent him a thank you text message. He did not respond. I think he's pissed at me, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, no, I look forward to hopefully getting a few more farmers on and doing a farmer forum roundtable
coming
up soon too. So
yeah, we're definitely going to do that. So I guess if anybody's interested, send us an email, farmersense1@gmail.com.
Could you send Glenn a hat for me?
Oh, I don't want to pay the shipping. Can't you?
I can't.
I'm joking. I'm sorry. No, I had to say that. Oh, Glendolyn. Oh, Glendolyn. Okay. Well, yeah. No, I think we're good. And Web Western Wear, FarmerSense10 is your 10% discount code. Check them out. Yep. Take all care, right, everybody.
Everybody, check us out on YouTube, any podcast location, TikTok, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it.
Like, share, subscribe.